Cue the music. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. And this warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Jeremy? Can you hear it? Feel it from there?
Oh, yeah. Especially because I think it's the first time we've had an actual intro since I started doing these a couple of months ago, because we always seem to screw them up. Thanks for being professional.
Oh, we try to.
Well, if we always forget them. Thanks for bringing the professionals.
If you want to do it right, I need to remind you and all of us that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. And learn more about that at BIPCOT.org.
Yeehaw.
So, hey, Jeremy, I'm really glad to be back on with you. It's been a while. I don't remember when you and I had a show together.
I know. I was trying to think of that earlier. I couldn't pinpoint it either. It's definitely been a few months, I'm sure.
Yeah, it has been. I had one with Michael about a week and a half ago, but we got droned by the government and only got about 30 minutes in, and then we were unable to proceed because I can't say where we were touched by the government.
Well, the part that made it out on the air sounded good. He did manage to salvage some of it. It was entertaining. So,
I think he did.
Yeah, I think he added it into his show. He did a partial solo show, and then he just slapped that in the end of it.
I did a show yesterday. Lou Sander.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly Lou Fien, came and visited to my town, to my house, and stayed here Sunday night.
So that's where that
was.
I knew you guys were. Yeah, I saw pictures. I knew you guys were like together, but I thought maybe you had traveled up north to see him. I don't picture Lou traveling that far down south. Wow, that's impressive.
Oh, there are photos. I haven't seen those. Well, no, Lou came down Sunday night, and he had a conference in St. Louis.
Oh, there you go.
And so he came down. I think about 12-hour drive from all the way, practically, the Canadian border up there in the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, yeah.
He came down Sunday night, and we just hung out, for a day, and we did a show. It wasn't the Freedom Fiends. It was one of Lou's podcasts, and had a lot of fun. Real good. It was fun to have him come down, even though I'm going to see him in a month from now at the Midwest Liberty Fest. You're going to be there, aren't you?
Yes, actually. Well, and according to my attorney, I should definitely be there.
Very good.
I checked in on that yesterday, and I explained the situation, and he said, listen, no matter what happens, just remind me of the dates, and I'll make sure you and your family are there. So
I'll make sure you get around it. Okay, he's not suggesting that you get out of town or anything.
No, just, because, I mean, I've been allowed to leave town the entire time. I just have to come back for my court dates, because that was the stipulations of my bail, but... with everything hopefully coming to a close soon, it was a question of, oh no, the timing of this, of course, it is going to land towards when I have to be in Michigan. I'm like, I can't miss that. I bought tickets the day they went on sale.
Yeah.
I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Actually, I'm sorry, that's not true. Not the day they went on sale, because they didn't figure out the cryptocurrency payments the right away, because they were considering accepting other things other than Bitcoin this year. But as soon as they finally announced that they were accepting cryptocurrencies and giving the early bird bonus, I'm like, I'm there. I bought my tickets for the whole family, so yeah, I can't wait, man.
Well, you got the early bird and the crypto discount, right?
I don't even think they did a crypto discount this year, and I just didn't care. Last year I got both of them. This year I think I just got the early bird, but still I didn't care, because after the year I've had, I mean, luckily I got to go there last year after everything happened, but it's been a rough year since then, so I definitely need to be back again. And
are you bringing your girls?
I'm bringing everybody this year. Not only the girls are coming,
everybody.
Jen's coming too.
Great.
Yeah. So we're, and Murder Dog, of course.
I don't think I've met her.
No, nobody has. This will be the first time.
I'm looking forward to that.
I don't think anybody who's going to be there has met her. Yeah. Cause nobody ever comes down to New York to visit me. So, and I've always traveled solo to these events.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of, you know, far away from the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just like Lou had the, I have about the same journey that Lou had down from where he was down to St. Louis, you know, down to your territory, as I do from here out to from here out to Michigan, because it takes me about 11 and a half, 12 hours. But it's worth it. I don't care.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. It's fun. It's, you know, it lasts, it's what, four full days long. And it's not as jam-packed as some conferences are, you know, when there's, you know, the three-ring circus sort of thing where you can't even do all the things that you want, as, you know, you have to just kind of pick and choose here and there. And by the time you make sure that you've eaten up your whole day with nothing but programs, you realize that you haven't visited with nearly all the people that you'd like to. And I find it a real nice balance, both the size of it and the intensity of the programs, and that is not over the top. So although there's going to be some good speakers at this one, I'm looking forward to hearing Scott Horton.
I am very much looking forward to that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, not only am I looking forward to listening to him speak, but I'm also looking forward to grabbing him and saying, hey, Scott, I have a recording studio right over here. Would you mind sitting down with me for 10 minutes? Because I would love to talk to you for my podcast, because I'm bringing all the gear this year. I brought it the past 2 years. I didn't use it last year because I had the kids and I couldn't juggle trying to do a show with the kids there. But this year with Jen, I'm like, I'm bringing the equipment. I'm going to set up the tent. I'm going to make sure I have it ready to go at all times, so I could try to grab people like Scott Horton for hopefully like a 10-15 minute interview. So, because that's the only way I think
that's
I'm gonna
get
in. That's
a great idea.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Huge fan of his. Have you read his book?
Yeah.
His
and
new book? Did you read his new book?
I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to.
I didn't. I listened to it. I listened to the audiobook. Spectacular.
I listened to the show. You know, the podcast, and have followed antiwar.com for years. It's the most reliable information that you can get on, especially the foreign policy and the war policy of the whole world, really, but the United States, which I have a special responsibility for, since I'm paying for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is very, very annoying. But I'm also looking forward to, you know, 2 years ago, CJ Kilmer of the Dangerous History podcast was there, and he's going to be back this year.
Yes.
And I'm really looking forward to him being there. Not just because he gave a good talk and I like his shows, but he's a really good guy. Be good to see him again.
Yeah, I actually got the opportunity 2 years ago when he was there. I got to hang out with him twice that year because he was at Pork Fest too. And I got to hang out with him for a day or so up there. And then I got to hang out with him in Michigan later that year. So that was a lot of fun. And I love CJ too. I've interviewed him a bunch of times. And just sitting around a campfire talking to him about history stuff was great. It was so much fun because he's just so full of knowledge and he gets so excited about it. We just sat there talking about it. Like a whole bunch of us were just sitting around almost like we were almost like forcing him into a lecture without even like him realizing it, because we were all sitting there. Everybody's sitting there with like our hands under our chins going, tell us more, CJ, please.
And he wasn't charging tuition.
Nope. Just giving the knowledge away for free. Great individual. I love that guy. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him too, and Brett Vanat too, because I got to meet him at Pork Fest a couple of years ago, and he's coming from the School Sucks project. So that should be.
So if there's any listeners that don't have their tickets yet, they still can get them at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest website, right?
Yeah, mplfest.org. And unfortunately, we
should mention that's. What, the 21st through 24th? It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, June 21st through the 25th in Dalton, Michigan at the Circle Pine Center. Unfortunately, we are recording on the last day of early bird pricing, and this won't be out in time for that. But you'll still be able to get tickets. And even at full price, it's still worth the experience.
Yeah, they're not expensive.
No.
This isn't like those hundreds of dollar conferences in Las Vegas or Orlando. Because you're camping, after all.
Yeah, I think the full price for the camping for the entire thing is $180 a person, or $180 for everybody, or something like that. Because yeah, I think that's what it was for four people. So that's great. Four people for $180 for four days.
Oh, for four, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what the full price was on what if I had paid that if I hadn't been an early bird, but you know, but yeah, people should definitely go check it out. I mean, heck, I choose. After going to Pork Fest and the Midwest Peace of Liberty Fest, that was the first time I'd ever gone to any of these festivals when I did that back in 2016, and I did both of them. And since then, I have gone out of my way once already, and now I'm going to do it a second time to drive all the way out to Michigan for, like I said before, 11 and a half, 12 hours, rather than driving the 5.5, maybe 6.5 hours it would take me to get up to Rogers at Pork Fest. So
you just can't stay away.
No, that's what I'm saying. I would much rather make the drive out there because, as you were explaining before, the more laid back attitude. That's more my. I like being able to just hang around and talk to people and actually sit with my friends who I talk to on the interwebs all day and actually get to sit down face to face with them and have conversations. Like that's great.
Lou told me that that Nick Hazelton, our yak farmer friend and former freedom fiend, is going to be there too. Apparently in his role as sous chef to Lou's mobile assault kitchen.
Well, that's the only one that gets to eat, because otherwise he's a dirty, dirty commie and he tries to just beg from everybody. We learned that at Pork Fest in 2016.
Yeah.
So that's why Lou put him to work. And yeah, there's another great reason for anybody who's maybe on the fence about going. A whole bunch of us fiends are going to be there, or you know, former fiends. I mean, I still count Nick a fiend, even though he's technically retired. But you, myself, Lou, Nick, and I was just informed on Sunday because I did a recording with Diana, who's been MIA for a little while. Diana, the Laughing Kitty, is going to be there as well. So,
really? I'm glad to hear that. She was AWOL last year.
Yeah, she had to miss last year, but she is planning on being there. Yeah. So,
and there's if you throw in all of the people that have been co-hosts on the Fiends, it becomes a pretty substantial number, even that are there. Shane Radliff and Shane
Buell,
is he still doing
I'm horrible. I totally forgot about Shane. Shane is still a fiend. Shane Buell, yes, of course, Shane will be there.
Yeah, I thought so.
And Shane Radliff, former fiend, will be there. And I think. Who did I run into last year that I didn't even know was like a fiend for like a minute? Was that Gretchen? I think Gretchen Clark? Was she the one who was like a fiend for a minute? Who I met for the first time last year.
Well, there were a number of people that were fiends for a minute because like in the first one that we did a live broadcast from on a Sunday afternoon. It wasn't the first Midwest Fest. It was the second one, and Lou and Diana and I did a live broadcast. And then brought in a number of the people that were there at the fest to talk for a while about their own experiences and that. So every time we get together to do the fiend photograph, anyone who was ever on the show is supposed to get in the picture.
That explains why that picture
keeps getting bigger. It's a growing group.
I was going to say that explains why that picture keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. Because I'm like, I don't remember doing shows with these folks. And I am one of the old timers around now. I've been here 2.5 years.
And you know, it's been very hard to do the weekend. That was a weekend when a live show on a Sunday afternoon. That was tough getting the connection all worked out. I think Michael swore off ever doing it again because it was so much work. And and now we don't have the lives. The only day that we could do a live broadcast from the campground was on a Wednesday night before it started, when nobody was actually there except the organizers. And like last year, Lou and I, we did a show at 1 o'clock in the morning on the Wednesday night. And now we don't even have a Wednesday night live broadcast. So I was thinking, well, no more. But, you know, is there any reason why, since you're bringing your equipment, we shouldn't also do a Freedom Fiends broadcast from there?
We could definitely do a show. I'm sure Lou.
I think we should do a show.
I'm sure Lou will be bringing his stuff as well. I know Shane Radliff's bringing all his equipment. So between a bunch of us, we'll have more than enough equipment to do like a full out show. I don't know. I mean, depending on connection, we could actually. I could talk to Michael. We actually could possibly try to go live because we are. We're playing a lot of radio stations on the weekends these days, so maybe, just maybe, I don't know.
Except except you don't have the board op connection in that. I don't think is there.
Yeah. We could still do a show. Oh, we could definitely do a show.
Talk about it.
We could definitely do some recordings, and that way Michael won't get, well, I'll of course check it this time before I give it to Michael, but you know, he won't get to complain because we'll all be in the same room and it won't be all this mess of equipment. It'll actually be me running it with my own equipment, and I know how that works. last time I got in trouble.
You're much better now. You'll be fine.
Well, no, it wasn't my equipment last time. I wasn't in charge. I was just kind of there. I mean, heck, I was doing magic mushrooms on one of those shows. I mean, I can't be held responsible for anything that happened that week.
Oh, that was a year ago. Nobody remembers anymore. Or was it more than a year
ago? Yeah, almost two now. Yeah.
That was two years ago. Anyway, come to the Peace and Liberty Fest at near Delton, Michigan, at the Circle Pine Center. It's a great weekend. It really is. But we were actually going to do a show this evening too, if I remember.
Yeah, we actually did have a plan. It wasn't just going to be all advertisements.
We did have a plan. Yeah, advertisements for the Peace and Liberty Fest. I don't consider that an advertisement. That's just me enthusing because I really enjoy it. But I sent you an article, and I sent you an article by a fellow named Joseph Sobrin, who was an editorial. A columnist, I guess you would say, for really a lot of years, going back into the 70s. He was worked at the National Review. And Joseph Sobrin, the problem that he did is that as the National Review kind of turned into, you know, a neocon sort of thing, largely, or at least in part, he didn't go that way. He didn't like the wars. And then when... most of those Middle Eastern wars were sort of proxy wars where the United States is fighting, say, Israel's battles. He called them out for that. And of course, they labeled him as an anti-Semite because he didn't like he didn't really like any of the wars. But when they were instigated on the behalf of Israel and were against Israel's enemies, Iran or Iraq or whatever over there, He opposed that, and I think he was the one who, after they got after him and actually got him fired from National Review, he redefined the word anti-Semite and said it used to mean that an anti-Semite is a person who hates Jews. He said, but the new definition is a person that Jews hate, and that's me because I don't support it. I don't support the wars in the Middle East. And but he was, he never did go back on it. And he died, it's been quite a while, 2010. He died in 2010. And but he left behind many, many, many posts and articles and that sort of thing. And one that I have dredged up from almost 20 years ago, from 1999, is advice on raising your children, on parenting. And it's called Teach Your Children Well. And he starts out, he says, because I write about politics, people are forever asking me the best way to teach children about how our system of government works. I tell them that they can give their own children a basic civics course right in their own homes. In my own experience as a father, I've discovered several simple devices that can illustrate to a child's mind the principles on which the modern state deals with its citizens. You may find them helpful too. And so I don't have to read and read and voice go out. You let's trade off. You do the first principle in teaching your children well.
Yes. And this one stood out to me right away. This is a very important one, I believe. For example, I used to play the simple card game War with my son. After a while, when he thoroughly understood that the higher-ranking cards beat the lower-ranking ones, I created a new game I called Government. In this game, I was the government, and I won every trick, regardless of who had the better card. My boy soon lost interest in my new game, but I like to think it taught him a valuable lesson for later in life. Well, I mean, what better way to show your child what the government, you know, how things work. I think that's beautiful. I mean, some people may think it's a little mean, you know, but I mean, you're prepping your child for life, right? I mean, is that what we're trying to do?
You're trying to prepare them for dealing and with the government. And he named the new game government. I mean, there's no point in giving war a bad name. Well, the game of war, everybody remembers that, right?
It's
not complicated, but you know, it was fun. He goes on. When your child is a little older, you can teach him about our tax system in a way that is easy to grasp. Offer him, say, $10 to mow the lawn. And when he has mowed it and asked to be paid, withhold $5 and explain that this is income tax. Give $1 to his younger brother and tell him that this is fair. Also, explain that you need the other $4 yourself to cover the administrative costs of dividing the money up. When he cries, tell him that he's being selfish and greedy. Later in life, he will thank you. So, rule number two, the thing that strikes me about these is that they're just right on the money.
Well, yeah. Well, this one in particular, there's a meme that's been floating around for a while, and it's a couple different variations of it, but it usually has Bill Murray's face on it, and it claims that this is a quote from him, which I don't, you know, it quotes on the internet, I don't really normally trust their, you know, the validity of those things that often without really looking up myself, but I've seen it enough times, but it basically goes, you know, if you want to teach your children about government, just, you know, about how taxation works, just, you know, when they ask for their dessert, just give it to them and then immediately take out 30 or, you know, he uses the 30%, but in reality, it's probably closer to like 50 or 60, maybe even 70%. But take 30% of the ice cream away. Just call it a tax, you know, and that's basically how it works. It's like for absolutely no reason. This is yours. We told you could have this. You have earned this in some fashion, but for absolutely no reason, I'm going to come in and take a giant chunk of it for myself. And, you know, again, most children, depending on their age and their, you know, their level of understanding of the world, will probably burst into tears when this happens. But, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of us have either been on the verge of or actually burst into tears when opening something like, you know, when a letter comes from the IRS or, you know, or you realize all the money that has gone out of your paycheck to taxes. And then you're like, you know, When you actually come to the realization that you've been thrilled about breaking even on your returns, only to come to realize later that, wait a minute, that meant I didn't get any of my money back. You know, I'm sure all of us have gone through that and broke it. You know, I've been on the verge of tears when I started to come to those realizations. I don't know about you, Randy, but so.
You're getting too close. You fly too close to the government and you get burned.
Well, exactly. So
it's best just to keep your distance.
Yeah. So again, this is, you know, may seem like a harsh lesson, but if, you know, in reality, if you're trying to prep your child for the world as it is, not the, you know, because what good is prepping your child for the world that you want to see if the world you want to see is not a possibility or, you know, or a legitimate reality, you know, even a chance at making it a legitimate reality? That doesn't do your child any favors, right? That leaves them very well unprepared. So. I think that.
Okay,
I think
but this is not enough, though. There's more. No,
there's
right?
more. There's more. Yeah. The next rule he tackles. Make as many rules as possible. Leave the reasons for them obscure. Enforce them arbitrarily. Accuse your child of breaking rules you have never told them about. Keep him anxious that he may be violating commands you haven't yet issued. Instill in him the feeling that rules are utterly irrational. This will prepare him for living under democratic government. See? Right there.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with AgoristHosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agris Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Exactly. That's what you need to prepare yourself for, because as silly or hyperbolic as some of this stuff may seem, I mean, let's try to break this one down. You know, make as many rules as possible. Well, government, I think, you know, laws, regulations, what, you know, ordinances, you add all those up. I think there's beyond, like, I wouldn't have been able to think that many were possible or if I wasn't aware of all this stuff. So I think they've accomplished that task. What do you think, Randy?
Well, there is the principle of law that ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Oh yeah, we get to that one later. That's what the he mentions that too. But yeah, you leave the reasons for them being obscure. Again, they give you reasons in the law, but it's usually written in sometimes. You know, maybe to put on my tinfoil hat a bit, intentionally vague language. So you don't really know.
You need to know these things.
Yeah.
You need to know that you may be breaking the law at any moment, laws that you don't know about. I'm not sure, like in the state of Missouri, I know, in our amusement parks that we have here, it's against the law to stick your arm out of a roller coaster.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a misdemeanor for you to stick your arm out. And not that you could reach anybody else with your arm, you know, like to slap them, but to, I think the idea that the government likes laws like this is that keeps people off balance and lets them worry about things that are of no importance to anyone.
Well, I don't know about that. That's pretty important to me. I mean, I'm baffled by it. Like, I've heard of some insane, you know, just, I mean, whether they're just like laws that have been on the books for like 100-something years that people just kind of forgot about, or even more recent ones. Like, I've heard of some insane laws and stuff. But this is really bothering me. I guess I'm triggered on some level. How do you possibly ride a roller coaster without sticking your hands up in the air and yelling, "Wee!" Like, how do you do that?
I can't fathom that. That's what people do. Well, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe you can. It's okay to put your hands up. I think it said to. Well, no. The actual wording. Now I remember the law. It's raising your arms while riding a roller coaster.
Oh, so
and
yeah.
You have. I mean, everybody violates. Here's another one, and I violated this one, and I was a little nervous about it until a year had passed. You know, the statute of limitations ran out. Burying a deceased pet in your own yard.
Oh, wow.
Because, and I'm sure this has to be the law in lots of places, but in the state of Missouri, you cannot bury any kind of an animal. And believe me, the definition of an animal, I've read this, it would fit a cricket, okay? It could be the corpse of any animal, a cricket, a mosquito, but in most people's cases, you know, like the pet cat or something, we buried our cat, and it was so many feet. It was about, you couldn't bury an animal within 100 feet of the boundary line. Well, anybody that lives in the city doesn't have a place on their property 100 feet away from the boundary line. So it's against the law, period, for anybody, you know, with a reasonably sized lot to bury a pet in their yard. And another one, if you possessed, I once prosecuted a guy. I didn't know this was against the law until I had to prosecute somebody for it, for possessing a baby raccoon.
Wow.
That was the big, and I nailed that guy good, man. I got him dead to rights. It's like he admitted everything. They found this, his kids found a baby raccoon rooting around out in the trash one winter, and they brought the baby in, and it was real sickly and that, and they kind of nursed it back to health. And then in the spring, it had become a pet, and the boys, they had Little League baseball, and the mother sewed a little uniform for the raccoon, and they took it to the games. It was a mascot. for mascot for the games. And then the Missouri Conservation Department, they got wind of it and came and found it. And I was a brand new prosecutor at the time. It was so stupid. I think if I'd have been there a little bit longer, I would have just thrown it out. But I was told to do it. So stupid, you know, I went and did it. So I prosecuted the guy. We had a trial. The guy took the stand. He told this whole story about the baseball team and all of that. And, you know, and he admitted everything. I was sitting there going, ha, the fools admitted everything. You know, I've got it dead to rights. And at the end, the judge, who really wasn't real incensed about this problem herself, she had to find him guilty. So she fined him guilty and fined him like a dollar or something. Oh. That was the end of it. I learned a few things from that, but...
Hello, friends. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Do you know about Cell 411? Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone that you can get on the Google Play Store and the iPhone Store, wherever you beautiful people get your iPhone apps. Cell 411 allows you to send messages in real time, including video and audio if you want, to friends that you pick ahead of time and set up cells where you can help each other. Could be used for families to help kids not be bullied, so they can call an older sibling or a family friend if they're bullied. Basically, you set up a cell with your friends and family or whoever you want. There's a little wheel on it, and when there's an emergency, you just hit the button of like the appropriate thing, like car broke down, police stop, criminal activity, I'm being pulled over, police interaction, medical emergency, fire, crime in progress, need a ride, ride sharing, anything. You can just call your friends and find them. It sends your GPS coordinates to them and gives turn-by-turn directions so they can get to you as quick as possible. They can also send a message back, yes, I'm coming, and it'll tell how many minutes away they are, or they can say, no, I can't come now. You can stream video and audio to them, which is stored on the Cell 411 servers for a few weeks. So if you get your phone taken away, you still have access to the video that was saved up until the point where your phone was taken away or destroyed. So if bullies, whether they're in uniform or private bullies, steal your phone, whether it's some Antifa or some overly helpful police person who doesn't want to be filmed doing his job for some reason, you'll still have access to this video. So I highly recommend that you get Cell 411. I use it. My wife and I use it. My friends and family use it. Cell 411. Go to getcell411.com or get it on the Google Play Store or iTunes Store. Cell 411, because your friends won't show up and shoot you.
It was including the fact that it was a crime to possess a baby raccoon. I ran into another crazy law like this down in a city, University City here in Missouri, where it's against the law to operate a vehicle with any public message on it in the city at less than 6 miles per hour. And the message, it can be a message meant to communicate any message to another, to a pedestrian or another driver, which includes all bumper stickers.
I was going
to
say, doesn't that qualify?
A car with a bumper sticker cannot drive at less than 6 miles an hour anywhere in University City, Missouri. Now, I don't know. At some point, you have to drive six when you're on your way down from 30 to a stop sign.
Yeah.
So I guess you're just breaking this law constantly through the day anytime you get to 6 miles an hour. I assume on the way up or on the way down. If you got a cop behind you, you don't have a chance unless you can get out of the city limits without going 6 miles an hour at any point. Yeah. It's also a crime here to just no explanation or context, but to release a swine is a crime in Missouri.
What constitutes a release?
No, I haven't found the definition, but to release a swine could get you up to a year in jail.
Oh, well.
So this
Well, I was just going to say, the last one you were talking about, also the whole, you know, with the insanity of the 6 mile an hour thing. I mean, that also goes directly to the other point that Sobrand made in his article about the arbitrariness of these laws, because that means, I could imagine that type of law in particular was originally written to stop people from holding up traffic for, like, you know, political reasons or whatever. And, like, if you're doing a campaign thing, you're going to be driving really slow. Like, that could probably, I could see that having an effect on that. But,
I think that's exactly what the law was for, was people maybe hauling political signs slowly through the city, things like that.
Yeah, like you see in the movies and stuff, where people used to have the bullhorns on top of their car, and they would drive around the town and call out, "Vote for so and so," you know, all those things. I can imagine that had something to do with that. But again, if these insane laws like this stay on the books, and then it becomes punishment for other normal activities. I mean, one of my favorite memes I ever made, it actually just came back to me recently, because of all things I hate about Facebook, one function I do like about it is their on this day function, where it gives you a whole bunch of your posts from the past couple of years on that particular date. Like, every day there's a new list of all these things, so I get reminded of all these things I wrote way back when, or different memes that I'd forgotten about. And one popped up, and this is another one of those ridiculous laws, the laws against cruising in your vehicle. And a couple of these signs that used to be up, the picture I have is from California, but I can't remember, but that one actually had the law itself on the sign, and so you could see, so they would actually define, you know, in a rarity they would actually define what it meant. But
is this one of those, if you pass the same place
within a 6 hour period? So I made a meme at, like, a bunch of people have memed this. My buddy memed it at one point, and then I memed one. I'm like, yeah, leave it to government to make it illegal to go to drive to and from a part-time job. If you have a job, you only work 4 or 5 hours a day, and you head in that direction to go to work, and then you head back, you've officially committed the crime of cruising. Thanks, government.
Well, see, but you could avoid that just by going home another way.
You could, but what if that was this? You know, what if the quickest route home was on the same street? So, you know, like, but that's the insanity and the arbitrariness of these laws. Like, these laws get set in place for whatever reason. And like I said, with the other one, it probably had something to do with political campaigning. I could totally see that, but it ends up affecting. It ends up affecting the people that have nothing to do with this more, you know, just like gun laws. People always want to change the gun laws to punish, to try to stop the bad people, except all it ends up doing is punishing the people that have nothing to do with it. Because anybody who actually wanted to get around these laws for the purposes of, say, political campaigning, all they would have to do is drive 7 miles an hour and make sure they never went up below that. And I don't think that's...
Well, maybe that's all the government wanted out of it, for them to move along.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, come on, at that low of a speed, I don't think it's that big of a difference, 1 mile.
You know, I told you that law, the wording of it definitely would outlaw bumper stickers, but I can't imagine why it wouldn't outlaw your license plate, too, since that's communicating information to the public. It wouldn't outlaw the plate, it would just outlaw driving at less than 6 miles an hour.
Well, that's official government. That's actually not yours, so that's probably how that would get around that. But the bumper sticker question is interesting to me, because I dealt with something similar up here. Not as far as, like, you know, a certain speed or whatever, but there are certain roads up here, like the parkways here in good old in New York, staying on Long Island. The parkways, you're not allowed to drive a commercial vehicle. And over the years, they've expanded the definition of commercial vehicle to pretty much fit everything, including myself at one point when I still had my pet sitting company, and I purchased those magnets that you get put on, you know, you can slap on your doors with the company logo and either the phone.
Oh, you had to pull that off or they'd pull you over.
Yeah,
huh?
I actually did get pulled over a couple of times for forgetting that I had them on, because I used to actually stop and get out right before I got on the parkway. If, like, that was the quickest way to get to wherever I had to do, I would actually do that. But I actually asked two cops that pulled me over the two times that I forgot. I actually asked both of them how bumper stickers did not fall under the same the same category, and neither of them had an answer for me. They were both completely dumbfounded. Like, I caught them both off guard, but they were like, you can see, see the wheels start turning about, because the whole thing is you're not allowed to. They expanded it so much that it didn't even have to be a company thing. If you were promoting something, I think that was the language.
Oh, just
they
a message.
Used.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, that's what I'm saying. It basically came close to the law you're talking about, you know, that type of thing. And that's how broad they made it. So I was like, how does a bumper sticker, especially one that has a phone number on it, how does that not qualify? And they just, both cops just like, they couldn't, you could see the wheels start turning. They're like, wait, like almost like, wait a minute. that doesn't make sense. But of course, you know, one of them let me off because I had one of those special PBA cards at the time. The Police Benevolence Association, the one thing.
Benevolent Association, yeah. Yes. A get out of jail free card.
Yes, I had one of those. The other time I did get a ticket, but both times the cops were just like completely dumb. You know, they didn't know what to say. And I was like, well, yeah, this is what happens when you make these type of laws. It ends up encompassing everybody without you even realizing it.
Was there some reason why they did not, you know, when you're talking about certain vehicles, like I can understand that if a vehicle is so heavy, it would damage a road. But why? What? I don't understand why a commercial vehicle.
The original justification
would
again
be bad.
Just like we've been talking about with all these other ones. When it started, it was designed to keep the bigger trucks off the parkway because they started redoing the bridges and they only made the the different overpasses that you go under on these different as you're driving across most of these parkways were only set to a certain height limit. So it actually ruled out, like that's how they started it. Originally, they banned those type of trucks, and then when other people started using smaller trucks to travel, they were like, "Well, now we have to figure out a way to keep them off too." So they just kept broadening the language. So yeah, it was originally designed to keep the much heavier.
Why did they have to figure out a way to keep smaller vehicles off if there was no problem with smaller vehicles?
Well, no, they wanted to keep the heavier ones off, but people started figuring out ways to use different vehicles to bring their commercial stuff. They just wanted to find a way to keep the commercial drivers on specific roads, like the LIE, the Long Island Expressway. That's where they wanted to shove all of them. They didn't want to allow anybody on these other roads. So, because people kept getting smart and figuring out ways around it, they had to keep broadening the language to where it became anybody who was promoting anything. You know, if it was any type of business, whether you were, even if you had like, you know, even if you're driving a Prius, which ironically, a lot of the other dog pet sitting companies around here are run by women who tend to drive Priuses. I don't know why, but I see a lot of them on the road. But they're the one, like, even if you have like this lightweight, supposedly like most environmentally friendly vehicle, you still can't do it because what else can government do than slap these insane one size fits all policies that just are, you know, whether they're designed to or it just happens that way, it's able to catch a lot more people in the net, and that way they can generate more revenue. So yeah, that's in the end, that's the real reason for it. But yeah, originally the claim was,
well, if it's to generate revenue, then the rationale was unimportant. The reason, the expressed reason, was completely irrelevant then.
Well, no, it almost always is. That the real reason is that they want to generate revenue. Their claim is that they wanted to make everybody safer and not have people, because the parkways, when originally designed, were a lot more, you know, twisty and turny than the big expressways were. And there's a lot of people out here. People are horrible drivers out here. And it just amazes me to this day that I see so many people on the road that, like, you can see them visibly getting petrified as they pull up next to, if they have to pull up to a semi or something, you know, like as they're driving, if they manage to pull up side by side, well, you see them like visibly start shaking, like they freak out, they slow down, they end up not passing it or falling behind it. They just don't know what to do because they're so scared of this big truck that something bad could happen. And that's the type of people that are around here. So I'm sure they had something to do with originally the laws passing too.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Claiming, oh, it's not safe. We need for the safetiness. We need to keep them off the road for safetiness.
Here it's just our bicycle riders. The town up the road from us has a law that it's a crime to cause emotional distress to a bicycle rider.
Oh, man. And
yeah, because they get nervous when you honk your horn or yell at them or flip them off.
See, now
and so you get a ticket if you do anything to upset a bicycle rider.
How does that get passed in some place like Missouri? That sounds like a New York or California law.
this is a college town.
Okay, that makes sense. Most of the college towns I know, even in relatively conservative areas, tend to be a little more SJW-ish in that fashion. I got you. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a town that has an NPR station. You know. So that could happen. Yes. Well, hey, let me move on. Well, there'll be other places to diverge here. More advice from Joseph Sobrin in raising your child well and preparing them to deal with government. When your child has matured sufficiently to understand how the judicial system works, set a bedtime for him and then send him to bed an hour early. When he tearfully accuses you of breaking the rules, explain that you made the rules and you can interpret them in any way that seems appropriate to you according to changing conditions. This will prepare him for the Supreme Court's concept of the U.S. Constitution as a living document. And, yeah, you know, when you have a constitution, you know, as one would be explained, you know, to someone who didn't know what it was, it makes it sound like it's this thing that's kind of set in stone. And if you really wanted to change anything in it, you'd have to go through a lot of rigmarole. Because we're all here agreeing to this thing now. Of course, that never happened. But, you know, somebody's great, 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 great granddad, you know, did sign the Constitution and agree to it. I'm sure no relative of mine, and certainly I didn't either. But this would probably help prepare your little baby for what was to come.
Well, yeah, because that's exactly how it does work. Even with these things that are, like you said, they sure seem like they're set in stone, but it's like, oh no, we can just we have to interpret it this way, and that's not what they really meant. Not that we can ask them what they meant because they're long gone, but yeah, we think this is what they meant.
Well, he's covered taxation, Joseph Sobrin, and he's covered basically the laws and the criminal justice system, preparing your child for that. This is more of understanding how the interpretation of the laws and the judicial system works, and I think the next section he's going into is politics in that. And if you want to take that one.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And again, this is
if you've held our place here.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next suggestion for how to prep your child for the real world as it is to promise often to take him to the movies or the zoo. And then at the appointed hour, recline in an easy chair with a newspaper and tell him you have changed your plans. When he screams, "But you promised," explain to him it was a campaign promise. Again, seems a little mean, but you know, that's what they're getting ready for, because as you know, anybody who even pays a half attention to politics should be able to tell by now, you know, why do so many people get mad when they're because their politicians that they voted in didn't do the things they wanted? And what always ends up, what do you find out time and time again, although most people keep going back to it, is, well, yeah, it's just a campaign promise. It doesn't actually mean anything. It's not like they're held responsible for what they said. That was just there to get you to agree to do whatever they, you know, to vote for you. Or in the situation with your child, you know, you could do the same thing. Maybe telling them that you're going to do this certain thing is to get them to do something else. And then, of course, then you change the rules. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I got what I wanted, and this is a lesson for you. And in the same way politicians doing that to people, it should be a lesson to them. Apparently they haven't caught on. Hopefully, if you teach your child at a younger age, though, they'll grasp this a lot more easily than most of your adult friends. This just goes over their heads.
There's a quote from H.L. Mencken, who wrote back in, I think, in the 20s. Is that, am I right on that?
20s, 30s, somewhere journalist around there, yeah.
And commentator, yeah. And he wrote, the state, or to make the matter more concrete, the government, consists of a gang of men exactly like you and me. They have, taking one with another, no special talent for the business of government. They have only a talent for getting and holding office. Their principal device to that end is to search out groups who pant and pine for something they can't get and to promise to give it to them. 9 times out of 10, that promise is worth nothing. And the 10th time, it is made good by looting A to satisfy B. In other words, government is a broker in pillage, and every election is a sort of advance auction sale of stolen goods. I find that to be a delightful definition or recap of what the government does and what it is.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. I like that one.
Of course, there are other nice illustrations like the, you know, the gang of thieves and the pirates and and that sort of thing. But Joseph Sobran is kind of stepping lightly. This is the sort of thing that he could have written in a, perhaps in a country where you weren't even allowed to say what you wanted to say. But by being tongue-in-cheek, it probably cuts even deeper. Sobran, he goes on, and in his next point, he's getting a little radical, too, you know, breaking promises and that sort of thing. Every now and then, without warning, slap your child, and then explain that this is defense. Tell him that you must be vigilant at all times to stop any potential enemy before he gets too big to hurt you. This, too, your child will appreciate, not right at that moment, but maybe later in life.
Yeah, I can imagine the child not appreciating it right then.
not right then, but... You know, that's what you have to do, is go around and find people that are too small to you know, knock a fly off your wall and slap him. And I won't say we do that, but the government that passes for control, you know, claims to control the geographic area that I live in, makes a habit of it all the time.
Oh yeah,
you know, and I wouldn't be near as annoyed by it if they didn't make me pay for it and thereby make me an accomplice, you know, an unwilling accomplice in all of their adventures, I guess you would say.
Well, yes, that is the. That is the thing that really, you know, really digs in deep when you think about it. Because it's like, yeah, I mean, I obviously don't approve of any of those things either. But, you know, if that's what you guys want to do, I mean, you know, that's fine. You know, you go do that. But, yeah, don't make me pay for it, man. That's insane. You know, that's why I think, you know, it's interesting that especially nowadays, we've reached a place where, I mean, it's always been... The government's always found a way to try to convince people that it's like seditious to even question the government in a lot of ways. So to create that chill factor, where so people won't actually stand up and say stuff like that, you know, say stuff. But you know, we've gone from you know, Martin Luther King proclaiming loudly, and so many people to this day still like resonate with the, you know, multiple things he said obviously, but the whole, you know, an unjust law is not a law, you know, and that's the whole idea. And so many people have said that, like, you're supposed to be able to, like, even the founding the fondling fathers, as Lou calls them, you know, they wrote a bunch of stuff about that, like, you know, you're supposed to be able to stand up against this. And that's like being forced to pay to have other people murdered or pushed around or just slapped around just so you could be the biggest, baddest bully in town. Like, that seems to me like that qualifies as an unjust law. Why everybody can't just stand up and say, no.
It can always get worse. It can always get worse. Right now, they only rob you to go and kill some family in Yemen. But if they wanted, they could actually enslave you, haul you over to Yemen and make you do it. They have that power, and under the the supposedly the Constitution, they have the right to do it. It's not in the Constitution. It's you know how the conscription, there's a Supreme Court case, maybe more than one, saying that conscription is legal, and the main case is not even in connection with the military. You know what it's in connection with?
No.
It was apparently very popular back 100 years ago and more, you know, turn of the century and maybe before then, that part of your duty as a citizen, and this would be in the state laws, that say in the state of Missouri, you would be required to give 3 days or a week's worth of labor to your local county government to repair the roads, and everybody had to do it. And it was in the context of one of those laws that this went to the Supreme Court of the United States, and they said, well, of course they have the right to make you do that. And why do they have the right? Because, see, at this point, the 13th Amendment, which eliminated slavery and forbids involuntary servitude, except penal servitude, which means if somebody's was, you know, convicted of a crime, they could be made to work, you know, in jail or something. But even with the 13th Amendment in place that said you can't have involuntary servitude except for this one thing, which is for conviction of crime, they just said, well, we've always done it. Everybody's always done it. So it's fine. And that, of course, is exactly the same logic for conscription for wartime. I think what I would like, and they're also talking, I read this last week, a couple articles. After I read them, I realized they were several years old, but it was still interesting, about the power of Congress to declare war. And one amendment that had been proposed was that they'd take the power away from Congress and have the public vote on whether you should go to war, which didn't really excite me much. But the second part of it was more interesting, and that if you voted yes, you had to immediately go and register for the draft. No. Oh, you had to go volunteer for the Army. And
I was thinking, behind.
Well, that might make somebody take a little more serious viewpoint instead of voting to send somebody else off to die, you know. And of course, what I would like to see, you know, when it comes to, like, if there's going to be a war or not, is that neither the Congress nor the president, none of them would have anything to say about it at all. Rather, you would just say 9/11 happened and they bombed, you know, they brought down the Twin Towers, and they got out that this was Osama bin Laden and his buddies that did it. And then somebody should put up a tip jar on the internet or a GoFundMe, you know, to go kill Obama. And then if whoever was interested,
Obama or Osama,
in funding that, what did I say?
Freudian slip, maybe. I don't know. You said Obama, but.
Well, I wasn't a big fan, but, you know, I wouldn't go that far. But I think that even in a totally free society without a government, you might end up having some people in some places that were so evil that people would band together and say, we're going to go stop this, you know. And I don't know if there'd be any way to stop that, but at least if it happened, no one would have to be involved in it that didn't want to be involved. That's one of the reasons why, personally, I'm not a pacifist. I don't feel that I can just turn away if somebody wants to break into my house and kill my family, you know, that sort of thing. I'm not going to do that. Command to turn the other cheek, I don't think that includes, you know, turning my children's cheeks. Even though I'm not a pacifist, I don't have any problem with pacifists, because as a libertarian, if you didn't want to fight in my war, I would never put a gun to your head and force you to do it. And you probably wouldn't either, right, Jeremy?
No.
No. So So, and the thing, and the good thing about the pacifist, he wouldn't join your war. I get that. But he also would never go to war against you. He if he won't use force against a bad guy, hopefully he won't use force against his neighbor. Of course, people do get confused a little bit in who that they're. I guess maybe there could be some people out there that call themselves pacifists who wouldn't lift a finger against Hitler, but they shoot their next door neighbor if he didn't pay his taxes. I don't know, but I'm not sure I know anybody like that. But anyway, that's well, we should move on.
So the
I think the next one is yours.
Yes. Yeah. This next one, again, the suggestions we're reading from the wonderful, I forget the title. This was Teach Your Children Well. That's right, from Joseph Sobrain. This next one is to let you know that at times your child will naturally express discontent with your methods. He may even give voice to a petulant wish that he lived with another family. To forestall and minimize this reaction, tell him how lucky he is to be with the most loving and indulgent parent in the world, and recount lurid stories of the cruelties of other parents. This will make him loyal to you and, later, receptive to schoolroom claims that the America of the postmodern welfare state is still the best and freest country on earth. Yeah. Luckily, this is a lesson I didn't even need to learn from Joseph Sobrain. Like I was going to teach my kids this one anyway. But yeah, this is I love the way he puts this because yeah, it really is. You know, that's what they do. They pump you up with all this nonsense and the whitewashed version of history, and then send you out there and go, all right, now rah rah America, right? And then it makes it much easier.
You explain to your daughters how they're lucky to be born to the greatest dad in the world.
Yeah, they just know that, you know.
The problem comes is that if you actually have to tell them that.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Which is, I guess, Sobrin's tongue-in-cheek take on it. But that's... let's see. Oh, well, anyway, there's one more point I think that Sobrin makes. He says, this brings to me the most important child rearing technique of all, lying. Lie to your child constantly. Teach him that words mean nothing, or rather that the meanings of words are continually evolving and may be tomorrow the opposite of what they are today. And then he wraps up and says, some readers may object that this is a poor way to raise a child. A few may even call it child abuse, but that is the whole point. Child abuse is the best preparation for adult life under our form of government. Joseph Sobrin, he was like I said, I think I mentioned earlier, he was a writer for the National Review, which was very conservative publication, still is, and ended up, he got sideways.
Is that the one that Buckley started?
That's the one that Buckley started, exactly. Okay. It was Buckley that ended up firing him because he just wouldn't stay with the war party thing. He parted ways with them over that. But he still remained for quite a while a conservative commentator, kind of along the lines of Pat Buchanan, who pretty early on became mostly anti-war. He was against the first Gulf War. He was against the second Gulf War and that sort of thing. But he also has been extremely anti-immigrant in that. So if you're a libertarian, you wouldn't be able to agree with him on everything. But he had some really, really good insights also. And Sobrin was that way. But then Sobrin, I think in the maybe he died in 2010, and I think in the sometime in the last 5 years of his life, he wrote a column called "The Reluctant Anarchist." And he came out and he was just, I mean, he was kind of, shy about it in a way and didn't really want to say it, but he came out and just confessed everything, that he'd finally lost all faith in government And he one of the examples that he gave, which most people have heard of course, is citing the statistics, the studies that were put together by, I think it was R.J. Rummel, Death by Government. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
About the 200 million plus people that were killed by governments in the last 100 years, not including war dead.
Yeah.
Either civilians or soldiers killed in wars were not included in the number. These were just murder by governments against their own citizens.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
You know, he gave all of his reasons, and we know, you know, the reasons, you know, so that the government is bad. And, of course, this article that he wrote in 99, you know, alludes to so many of the problems with the government. But he cited this R.J. Rummel and just basically the fact that, considering the massive evil that the government perpetuates, you know, every single day, they're killing innocent people around the world. They're making no one safe anywhere. And I was born during the Korean War, and I was born into a war that shouldn't have been fought. And I've never seen one in my lifetime that should have been fought. It's, you know, it's as simple as that. We have that constantly. And he pointed out the statistics about how many people governments kill. And he said, some of you may object that, you know, if we get rid of the government, what will we replace it with? And citing how evil it is and the murder that it commits, he says, does it even matter? Is there anything that could be worse? I mean, imagine warlords going around in this Mad Max scenario and that. And he said they wouldn't be able to kill as many people as modern governments kill. So let's move on. And we can find a way through this without coercive government. I once I read that thing, I was going to be a fan forever. But yeah, if you Google the guy, most of his articles are up, available on the internet. There's a page called Sobrans, and they have quite a few of his articles over at
Mises,
over at lewrockwell.com or at the Mises Institute. Yeah,
that's actually why. Like, I didn't know, like, when you started talking about him at the very beginning of the show and like giving a little backstory on him, like, I didn't know all the backstory on him. But I do know the name, and I have read a lot of his stuff over the years, and it's almost all came from Mises. Like, I constantly would stumble across articles of his. I always either enjoyed and learned something, and usually ended up agreeing with a lot of the things that I found him saying over the years. So yeah, I definitely. But that the one you're talking about, I don't think I've ever read the Reluctant Anarchist one. I definitely have to check. I'm gonna have to check that one out.
Yeah, he wasn't very old either. I think he was 64 when he died. So it was kind of soon. I met the guy once. I was at a conference, I used to get the paper, and every time I picked it up, the one thing I wanted to read was his editorial. And like I said, I wish he was still writing, but you know, we all go at some time.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Did you see the article? Did you see the article this week about the somebody at the Chicago Fed in addressing the problem of the underfunded pensions in Illinois?
No, I think I missed that one.
Well, apparently the pensions in Illinois are so underfunded that I think they go up. They have automatic COLAs every year that are beyond levels of inflation. It's just insane, the generosity for the pensioners in Illinois. I'm assuming these are union pensions, but I'm not sure, government pensions.
Oh, no, yeah, they're all government pensions. And yeah, it's, I mean, I know, yeah. I like I said, I didn't catch that article, but I definitely, like, I've known the story with the Illinois stuff for a couple of years now, because I actually looked into that pretty deeply a couple of years ago when I started hearing rumblings about it. Yeah, it's insane. They're like, you know.
Well, this is a solution.
Oh,
this is the solution to the problem.
Okay.
The solution that was proposed and is that all property in the state, all real estate, would be taxed annually at a full 1% of its market value every year. End of story. I think that would run 30 years or something. Can you imagine?
So wait a minute. So the call, this the solution that they're that this person individual is calling for, this is what they're doing, is saying, you need, now the citizens of Illinois will have to pay even more tax for stuff they were taxed for in the first place to have these things. So that's,
well, they already have high taxes there.
I know,
people are leaving the state.
But they were already taxed to have, like, if you're putting a 1% per the market value on all the public property, right? That's essentially what this is doing.
No, all the private property.
Oh, the private property. Oh, so yeah, so their solution is to drive everybody out of the state then.
you know, it would, if you had a home that was worth $200,000 and you're already paying an exorbitant tax rate anyway, and they impose a state property tax of $2,000 on top of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It'll push people over the edge.
I mean, I wouldn't feel safe standing on the bridge over the Mississippi, you know, from Illinois, because you'd get run down with the people leaving.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think, you know, think about where you live, and I, you know, I'm thinking where I live, and I know how much I pay in taxes. And right now we pay about 1% of our property taxes. Ours are not that high compared to some places, but we pay about 1% of market value for our taxes in, you know, for my home. And this would exactly double it. And what would I get for my money? Absolutely nothing.
No, exactly.
And I think the thing that would make me so mad if I was in Illinois would be, first of all, these are guys that have, these are cushy pensions. Pensions that, you know, most people don't have pensions anymore. People that work for private companies, they almost never have pensions anymore. All private business has given up on pensions and have moved to the 401ks and having some matching contributions. And that's what took the place of pensions. Only government employees have pensions anymore. And the reason they're in so much trouble is because they're so generous there. I don't know why they aren't pinching the pensioners.
Yeah.
And why they wouldn't just say, look, what we're going to do is we're underfunded. We've only got, you know, 60% of what we owe you, and that's all we got to pay. So whatever you got coming, if your pension was $3,000 a month, you're going to get 40% less. And that's it. And if you don't like it, we'll declare bankruptcy, and you can have the federal government come in. They'll seize all the assets and divide it up amongst you, and then you go to hell, you know. I don't, that's a sad thing that it would happen to somebody who needs the money, but at least the justice,
oh, of course,
is there, that you're not stealing from everybody else just so someone else can just simply live as comfortably as they expected.
But that's
you know, if you buy a stock and it goes down, you don't expect anybody to come in and bail you out. You know, you just lose it and suck it up. And that's what, I think that's what pensioners should do.
Well, yeah, I
same thing with Social Security, right?
Sure.
Well, actually, Social Security should just be abolished. But if it did come down to it, you know, say 20 years from now, they say, well, Social Security is underfunded. We don't have enough coming in to match the need this year. You know, I would feel like saying, well, if you're not going to get rid of it, how much do you have coming in? They said, well, we've got 96% coming in. I said, then you don't have a problem. Just write me a check for 96%, you know, what I was going to get. Shut up and get out of my sight. I mean, that's just what should be done. I don't get it. You know, I mean,
well, because the
it's not tough love; it's just justice and fairness. Of
course, yeah, but the point you brought up, one of the things you brought up is that these people, these pensioners, because it's everybody in the government. It's not even just like the people, like the people at the top. It's pretty much everybody has gets these insane pensions. If you're a government employee of some sort. And yeah, that's what's bankrupted, virtually bankrupted at this point. But they don't see it as them taking from everybody else. Thus, they're punishing everybody else by having it done the other way. These people don't see it, and it's so easy to convince the overwhelming majority of people that it's not the case either, because they bring out the sob stories of these people and their families, and how could you do this to them, and blah blah blah, and we need these people, and then they threaten strikes and whatever, and the unions get involved, and that's how it always wins. But that brings us right back to the article we were talking about, and why, you know, as tongue in cheek as that might have been, it might be a good idea to teach your children a little more important things, like how things actually work, because otherwise you end up with people who get these insane pensions later on in life and then don't understand why they should be the only ones to suffer. Why shouldn't everybody else?
Yeah. And you know, it's hard to, another thing that you could have in government pensions is that they deliberately set them up so that they would not have the money to pay for them. I mean, There's, and I'm not a statistician and all that, but there are people that are good with numbers that can say, if you contribute, you know, to this fund, and if you get such and such a return, that when you turn 65, there'll be this much left that could be paid out to you every month, you know, from what you put in and how it grew. And just like the matching, the matching 401ks and that, if the employer put in some of the money and you put in some of the money, they could tell you, well, when you retire, you're going to get your cut of whatever, you know, how the fund is done. You'll get what you get, and that's all that you get. We couldn't possibly guarantee you a dollar amount. Well, we'll guarantee you what you have coming to you. And if you want to opt out of it, that's fine too. But they couldn't do anything like that, you know, as I guess the unions, when you're negotiating with a union and you're talking about the money that someone's going to have to pay 30 years from now, I guess you don't care. You know, it's going to have to come from the taxpayers, I suppose. But I don't know. The thing that worries me sometimes is that is there some way the federal government could get involved in bailing out some of these pension ones and I would end up paying for it?
Oh, sadly, when it comes to government, anything is possible. Although I'm just looking at the clock, I think we got a couple minutes left. But yeah, I suppose that is a threat. You know, I mean, they've bailed out everybody else. Why wouldn't they bail out something like as large as the state is? You know, they bailed out the banks, they bail out the auto industry. Why not bail out a state like Illinois? I don't know.
Well, the reason why the federal government shouldn't be able to bail anyone out, is because they don't have any money. They're going $1 trillion in debt every year now. We're going into this year, isn't the national debt supposed to be $1.2 trillion this year? I don't know how they could possibly do anything for anyone. They're broke.
Well, yeah,
big time.
They shouldn't be able to, of course, because yeah, the debt itself is up. I think it broke the 20 trillion mark, right? And that's just what's on the books. The overall national debt, that doesn't count the unfunded liabilities, which is things like these insane pensions are included in stuff like that. The unfunded liabilities that, you know, I've seen estimates from anywhere from 85 trillion to 250 trillion. So of course they have no money. But
what would happen if the federal government just defaulted?
I'd like to see that happen.
It would be a good thing, wouldn't
it? Yeah, it would. For all of us, definitely.
You know, I mean, there would be people that would be hurt by it and that. But, you know, there's people, the federal government's taking that extra $1.2 trillion and they're killing people all over the world. So, you know, somebody's going to get hurt no matter how you do it. But if the federal government, the U.S. government, were to default on all its debts and just say, they're gone, and look at us, we're too rich, there's nothing you can do about it, so just go lick your wounds or something. But the best thing about doing that would be nobody in their right mind would loan them any money ever again.
Exactly.
And that would be great.
Exactly.
That would be wonderful. Oh. But it would be so wonderful that it'll never happen.
Exactly.
The government would just collapse under its own weight before it would do something like that. It wouldn't actually declare a default. It would just implode or whatever if it got, you know, far enough behind, I suppose.
Well, we can only hope. But
you know, not that I want to see it, but, you know.
Yeah.
I would like to see the federal government replaced with something, anything.
Well, we'll have to talk about that next time because we got to get wrapping up. But this has been a lot of fun, Randy. I'm glad we were able to do the show.
Thank you for inviting me, and I will see you at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest next month.
Yes, and once again, anybody who doesn't have tickets, consider getting them and join us there. So thanks, everybody. This has been the Freedom Fiends. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Bye.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Benat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.